Monday. I, Maddie, and Sophie were among the 12 girls who were chosen to be in the funeral. All of us were dressed in white. We had wildflowers, the same I had picked, in great torn armfuls to carry. Josh and Zedediah were there, Josh in a jacket too small for him, and all the Preston children. The church bell filled the air with sound as we walked toward the cemetery. The day was so bright and the sky so clear, it seemed to enjoin us to praise. Yet no one was there whose eyes were dry. Even the men were weeping. They say Cassie's father has composed the verse under which she will rest. It is to be a full 4 lines, and she should have no less. She lived among us for a while and brought joy where she went. We thought she was a gift of God, but learned she was but lent. Ever since I heard it first, the tolling words repeat. I think they're so beautiful, but learned she was but lent. I shall remember Cassie forever and shall strive to be good and kind as she was for her sake. Thursday, August 25, 1831. We are much deprived of Maman. She's often at Shipman's now to help out as she can. She's almost unnaturally calm, nor, since that day, has doubt or question been heard to cross her lips. Father, I know, and Uncle Edward have asked Mr. Shipman, can they help? But this he firmly refuses. Resolutely, yesterday, Aunt Lucy carried out her lovely frocks, saving not a single one, to be converted to mourning cloths by means of the great dye spot. Such delicate muslins, both sprigged and plain. How well I remember when she first came, and all of us, yes, Cassie too, took such pleasure in their intricate cut, or what matters it now? Okay, let me read that again. How well I remember when she first came, and all of us, yes, Cassie too, took such pleasure in their intricate cut, or what matters it now? I do not know how they do it, says Mama. He, Emma, all of them quiet, all of them so resigned. One time Father tried to explain, to say that country life being hard, country folk must learn to accept, else they will surely be broken. Today, however, he only sighed. I know, he said, I know. Friday, August 26. Merely a week ago, Cassie still lived. Had I known how few her hours, perhaps 'tis better, after all, that our last parting was filled with joy, confident of the morrow. Saturday, August 27, 1831. We should remember our departed friends only to imitate their virtues and not to pine away with useless sorrow. Our Speller, last page. I tried to be guided by these words, but I am ever mindful of Cassie, and thinking of her must grieve. Sophie too remembers. Today she said, remember that day when we all walked home together and I made Cassie promise to stay? How selfish I was and so unknowing, and now she's so gone from all us, from us all. No, I protested, more with us than ever, for she lives in our thoughts and love. But that was only something to say. My heart knew Sophie right. Later today, going after our cow, I passed the shipman's house. My eye flew up of its own accord to find the window, Cassie's window, that I once knew so well. I scarce could believe she was there no more, and never again would answer to me when I called her name from the road. There by the ledge we had sat so often, exchanging small, fond, secret thoughts, and what foolish confessions. Mrs. Shipman says that on that morning, when they first knew that Cassie was gone, her face was entirely peaceful. The lips, which never would speak again, were parted in a smile. Therefore, Cassie's mother says, we must also, trusting be, proving thus our enduring love, and equal in our faith. Meanwhile, Maman awaits the stage and hopes for her book's arrival. Suppose, she says, it is somewhere told how to combat such illness. Suppose it is somewhere told how to combat such illness. Then ought we not inform ourselves against another occasion? Then ought we not inform ourselves against another occasion? Maman, Miss Shipman, both of them wise, yet each proposing such variant ways to confront this loss. What would my own mother have said, who did not smile with all dying breath, and whom shall I believe? Friday, September 2nd, 1831. Today, as I sat over my book, drawing flowers and curling ferns, though I should have worked at my letters, David appeared at our door. I thought perhaps he had come for Daniel, but no, this was a different errand. He'd brought such lime as we would need for preserving our eggs for the winter. He was to tell us they'd more than enough and would be glad to share it. Some have whispered that Miss Shipman, for all that Maman had become a friend, took unkindly M's poor regard for the doctor attending Cassie. I think that this is not the case, and now this kindness proves it. The errand accomplished, D did not leave, but watched me as I picked up my pen and resumed my sketching. "That's pretty, Kath," he said after a bit. Then, taking the pen direct from my hand, he drew the dear inquisitive mouse, which now peers at my daisies. I did not know he was thus inclined, only that Cassie was not, quote-unquote, artistic, as she used to say of me. Sunday, September 4, 1831. This morning's sermon reminded us that great though our grief and suffering be, others have suffered more. It is just 5 years since the Wiley slide, which was made the case in point. After we supped last night, recall the tragedy. The year was 1826, and on the mountains, hereabouts, there had been disturbances and troubling slides of rocks. Most concerned were those like the Wileys, whose farms were perched on Crawford Notch, where the mountainside climbs steeply. On this particular afternoon, the ominous rumble of distant boulders warned of avalanche. No one knows for certain what happened, or at what moment the Wileys decided to flee the imperiled house. Alas, for the frailty of their persons, they perished all, one and all. There would be rescuers found them there, caught as they were by rock and stone, which coursed across once fertile fields, destroying all they met. They say that some of them clutched in their hands such small possessions as they'd hoped to save, a book, a portrait, a doll. As for the house they had lately left, It was perfectly saved. At that moment, the avalanche had parted, roaring down on other side, on either side, neither breaking the window glass nor unhinging the gate. That's pretty ironic. Although the rescuers lost all hope, still they entered into the house and its ghastly silence. As if that silence itself would speak, the Bible lay open on the table, presenting a text which Father now found and read aloud to us. The Lord also thundered in the heavens, and the highest gave his voice. Then the channels of the waters were seen, and the foundations of the world were discovered at thy rebuke, O Lord, at the blast of the breath of thy nostrils. Daniel, at the sound of this, broke into sobs, strange, racking boy's sobs, and stumbled from the room. I then remembered what I've cruelly forgot, being turned in upon myself. He loved Cassie too. Monday, September 5, 1831. While the wash day kettles boiled this morning, I took time to assist Maman in tying up her herbs. Earlier, we had picked them over, sorting them as to kind. Tansy we had in goodly amount, and pepper, and spearmint both. She especially favors a peppermint tea, strongly brewed to settle the stomach, or when we're looking peaked. Also, we had sassafras roots and comfrey from the garden. Later, Asa and David came by to visit with Daniel a while. They three have grown rather closer together and sometimes will let me join them now that Cassie's gone. That is the end of chapter 15.